Hello and welcome to Pop a la Carte, episode 106, where I will pretend to be Valerie, because she is currently in absentia. I am here with a lovely guest.
Hello, my name is Catherine, and I'm one of the staff writers on With an Accent.
Yes, Catherine loves many things, musicals, Disney animation, and live action. What else do you love, Catherine?
Pop culture trash, basically. It's bad.
But if you love it, how can it be bad?
That's the question.
Anyway, today we will be talking about the trash of the upper echelon of culture, Oscars, that were last night, and how we fared with our ballots and our dreams. Then we shall talk about upcoming musical movies that we're very excited about. Sam Raimi potentially being in talks to direct Doctor Strange 2. Plus, it's maybe getting a new writer, so everything's changing over there. And finally, I will tell y'all why y'all need to watch Birds of Prey and make it money, because oh my god. All right, let's begin. Oscars. How are we feeling? What happened?
I started watching, I think, at noon, and so I've been watching, I was watching Oscar footage all afternoon, and I think by the time 8:30 came around, my brain was like, that's it? It's over? What?
Yeah, wow, like, you were just really on, like, Oscar's watch.
I normally do, like, the whole day thing, like, if I have a whole day, and normally starts, like, when those actor, like, on actor interviews start, and then it kind of goes from there.
Very nice, very nice. I was watching Birds of Prey in the morning, so I did not get to watch the red carpet stuff. I came home, like, I got home by, like, 3:30, I think, and then I was, like, editing articles while having one eye on the red carpet interviews. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as long of an ordeal for me, but, you know, the Oscars still run long regardless of when you started watching.
That's true. I think they went into 30 minutes of overtime last night.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's crazy. I saw that it was like the lowest rated Oscars ever, and it was like a drop of like 30% from the first hostless Oscars. So I guess we could just be like, why? Why is that?
That's weird, because I thought this was probably one of the best ones that they've had in this new format. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, while I prefer hostlessness, mm-hmm. sometimes the host can be a draw, right? If you have a famous comedian who's going to be hosting, maybe you're like, oh, it's like a comedy show for that comedian, so I want to watch them make jokes. So that might be one reason, hostlessness. And then also, I do think it's like the best song nominees and like the performances they were going to have I don't think that they really stood out this year. Like, I mean, I love the Elton John Gonna Love Me Again song. Mm-hmm. I love The Unknown, etc. But I don't feel like they've really, like, gone into the cultural lexicon, if you will, the way that, like, for example, Let It Go did for the first Frozen. Or even when you have, like, I don't know, I guess just really, like, big performers who are going to be singing the best song of something. Like Adele for Skyfall or whatever. So that's another reason that people might be drawn to watch. And unless, like, Billie Eilish fans just really wanted to see her sing again, even though the Grammys just happened, I don't know that.
I mean, it was an interesting year for Best Song. And I know a lot of Frozen fans wanted Show Yourself, but the reason why Disney didn't was because it spoils the entire movie.
Yeah.
And so I can see why Disney decided not to go that route. And I think that's, fans are still mad. And I know some Frozen fans are still mad because, like, the other international Elsa cast members didn't get as much time as Adina. So you can't please everybody, and it's very hard.
This is very true. You cannot please everyone. One thing they could have done is if they had promoted Eminem performing at the Oscars. Because Eminem performing at the Oscars was a big surprise and a very confusing surprise. I did not understand what was happening at first.
They should have talked about him. I know they kept things under wrap, but that should have been at least a snippet or something.
Yeah, if they had been like in a special performance from Eminem, people would be like, what? What's going on? Let me tune in. And then people that wouldn't necessarily tune into it otherwise would have tuned in. But oh well, they didn't do those things. So now they have the lowest ratings, etc. But I agree with you that I think that I don't know. I guess in terms of the wins, maybe. Like, with the new format, it's, like, a smoother operation in the new format. But also, a lot of, like, the acting nominations were super, like, you know who's going to win in all the categories. And also, there was, like, a lot of unnecessary snubs. So a lot of people, again, it's like, I've seen the same people win all award season, so why would I tune in to just see it happen again? But yeah, so, oh well, that's okay, because I still got what I wanted out of the non-acting awards. So, speaking of the awards, how was your ballot looking at the end of the night, and how many of the movies did you actually see?
I think I tried to see a handful, and then work just caught up with me, and I didn't have enough time. I ended up seeing, I still need to see Joker. I just have a thing with clowns, so I have to, the Joker is still, like, the only clown I will ever tolerate, because he's my favorite clown. But that's still on my list. I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Judy, I still need to see Marriage Story. I loved 1917. I was like, wait a second. Wrong number.
719 would be an interesting movie. What happened that year?
That ancient history, man.
Right.
I think I also saw a little bit of Parasite, and I think I saw Rocket Man. So I saw half of them, I think. So it's not bad.
All right. You haven't seen all of Parasite? We're gonna get you on that. Gotta get you on that.
And then I saw Little Women, but I didn't get much besides the one category in costumes.
Yeah, got costumes, yeah. Oh, poor Little Women. I managed to see all the Best Picture nominees right just under the deadline. Like, nice. That last week, I was like, you know what? I'm going to put them on while I work, because what else am I going to do? So I watched Joker and Irishman in that last week. And then just Saturday, I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch Judy, because I want to know if Renee Zellweger deserves that award. I know she's going to get tomorrow. So,
right?
So I did see Judy, and I was very impressed with Renee's performance. I was impressed. I was like, she met the expectation, given how many awards she had gotten.
Oh, yeah.
So that was good. The movie itself was like a little like, okay, you're not telling me anything new. But it was very, you know, by the numbers biopic. But I still cried, and she was amazing, especially in the way that they filmed the performance parts and the way that she acted out Judy Garland singing.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. A deserved award. And I did see Joker. I did not, like, I don't hate it. But I also don't think it's, I feel like it deserves neither the praise nor the censure that it has received so far.
I will agree with score, though. It does deserve score.
Mm-hmm. The score is haunting. And I think that, that's the first time a woman has won. A solo female has won for a score, too. So that's awesome.
Yes.
So there was lots of, like, different, like, little, like, bits of history being made at the Oscars last night. Like, Taika Waititi winning for Best Adapted Screenplay is the first Indigenous man to win. So
which
that's
is
awesome.
Big. I'm part. I have Kiwi and Maori blood in me, so I was there he is.
And yeah, I love Taika, and I love Jojo Rabbit. I thought it was especially like that's. There's so many films this year that are like are their directors or are their writers or both. Mm-hmm. And so Taika Waititi, or well, Jojo Rabbit really was that. So he totally deserved that award, and I wanted Greta Gerwig to win for Little Women, mostly because I was annoyed that she didn't get nominated for Best Director, and she totally deserved a nomination. But I'm totally happy with Taika winning, too. Mm-hmm. So he would be the other one I'd give it to. So, great success.
Yeah, I think it was either between Taika or Greta for me in that category. Either one of them would have been fine.
Yeah. So, and he's so fun. I love Taika. I know that Valerie pointed out the... that, like, I don't know if you saw on her Twitter, there's the Indigenous people that are supposed to be local to LA that she says are not actually local to LA, and there's another group that is.
I thought I saw parts of that from her Facebook post, not on Twitter, but I do remember seeing something of that.
Yeah, so I thought I think that's, like, interesting that there's kind of, like, a dispute on that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, I mean, like obviously it's good that they want to acknowledge Indigenous people, and they should do more than just have Taika Waititi talk about them at the Oscars, but it is I think that it's also something that needs to be more research, or needs to be, you know, people need to be made aware of it, right? It's okay, right. So it says that PBS acknowledged the Tongva as the native people of the LA, but they should be aware that they are falsely representing themselves. The real native people of LA is the Kiz Nation. So, mm-hmm. So I shall have to read. She sent me a document on it, which I will have to read. I haven't had time yet today, but I shall.
You will. You will.
I will. So, were there any categories before we talk about obviously the best thing that ever happened to me? Are there any other categories that were surprising to you or that were not surprising and yet you were displeased or very pleased by?
I was very vocal about animated feature. I knew Toy Story was going to get it. I knew from the very beginning it was going to get it, but I loved Klaus so much. And I was like, I know I want to be happy for Toy Story, but I loved Klaus so much. And I'm still bitter.
Oh,
sorry, Pixar, I love you.
I haven't seen Klaus, so I cannot speak on that one, but I definitely plan to watch it. And I've only heard good things. So
it's that same old charm of the hand-drawn animation. And it's, even if you don't watch it around Christmas time, that's totally fine, but it's a new version of, like, guess Santa Claus. And it almost is very, like, it has, if you love watching, like, Tim Burton movies, it has some of those dark elements. But there's also a lot of hope in it as well. And it's done, just the animation style and the storytelling alone in that. It pulls you in. So I think you would really like it, actually. And it doesn't have to be around Christmas time, even though it's like a Christmassy, in quotes, Christmassy movie.
Yeah. It's never too late to learn about, you know, the origin of Santa Claus. So this doesn't have to be Christmas. I definitely do want to watch it, though. I was, like, even though I knew there was, like, literally no chance, it was not possible, I was kind of rooting for the other Netflix film, which was...
That's true. That was also really good.
I lost my body. I was like, aw. Because just, again, like, I love the animation for it. The story was really touching. You know, literally, because it's the hand touching things. But yeah, I knew, we all knew it was going to be Toy Story. Yeah. I still am surprised that Frozen 2 wasn't nominated. I don't know if Disney just only wanted to push one, but they put both of their songs in there for best original song, which probably vote and gave it to Elton. So I don't know why they didn't also do that, I guess, to not split the vote for animated feature. I don't know.
Probably. I know sequels normally tend to not do well, but Frozen 2 as a sequel did very, very well.
Yeah.
Disney sequels have always been notoriously hit or miss. Like, nobody talks about Cinderella, Twist in Time.
Right.
That's Cinderella 3 for people who aren't aware.
And it's horrible. That's why no one talks about it.
So I can see why they were a little hesitant, but it also, like, you can have a movie that crosses the $1 billion mark and still not do very well at the Oscars, but it'll still have its strong fan base either way. So I'm sure they weren't worried about it either way, but.
Right. I just wonder what made them want to go for Toy Story 4 instead. I guess just the decade-long wait. I don't know. Or maybe they really just believed in it more as a film. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I think so. Because I feel like Toy Story 4 was just maybe a little... They were on the same... actually, now I take that back. They were both on the same page. Because there's a lot that Frozen 2 tackled at the same time as Toy Story 4 tackled as well. So,
yeah. I don't know. They just... But it worked because they won.
Right.
I love Toy Story 4. And I didn't even watch Frozen 2 in theaters. So, like, Frozen just isn't for me, like, as impactful. But I did think that the film was good. Like, when I did end up watching Frozen 2, I thought it did a really good job with it. But Toy Story has been, like, you know, followed me my whole life. So.
Oh yeah. You know, like, there's a group of us that grew up right alongside Andy. And, like, when the team up there said that, like, for those of you that grew up with Andy, I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I felt that too. I felt that. Is there any other, like, I will say, I've already said this. I said this the whole time, but, like, I best actress should have had Lupita Nyong'o in it from Us.
Yes.
And somehow, I don't, because there's one actress I would definitely take out.
I feel
to put Lupita in. And then I would also like Awkwafina for the farewell. So I'm like, I don't know who the other actress is, but at least
I know. I wanted the farewell to do so well as well, but I think they were like, we already have Parasite. We don't need the farewell, right? I'm like, yes, you do. You need both.
Exactly. Like, you can't just pick one. But speaking of, like, you know, Parasite didn't get any acting nominations, even though all the acting was amazing. And then Farewell couldn't even get, you know.
Nothing, even though Awkwafina had been.
Yeah. People have been raving about Awkwafina's performance all year. And on the supporting cast side, again, I would take out one actress. It's the same actress.
I see your shade.
And then put J-Lo in there. So I was like, what is happening? It is strange to see just like the categories, which is so like, oh, okay. You know, like a Winter Wonderland. And then Cynthia Erivo. Speaking of, she gave a wonderful, like her, like the stand-up song from Harriet,
yes. Which
I have not watched, admittedly, but I love her voice. I love her as a singer, and she gave a fabulous performance.
That was wonderful. I think her and Chrissy Metz also did a great job as well.
Yes, and I wasn't expecting Chrissy Metz to go up there. I didn't know she was going to sing. I forgot that she had a song, LOL. Oops. But I loved it. She did a great job. And I was just thinking as I was watching, I was like, her character on Us, this would be like her dream come true for her, you know, to be performing at the Oscars. So.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool.
But yeah, no. Agreed. I'm still mad about J-Lo.
Yes, I'm so, I mean, like, to not even be nominated, whatever. After all this, hate. But I will say that I was very pleasantly surprised at the turn of the Oscars, obviously, because I was, as much as I had been rooting for Parasite the whole award season, I was like, I will manifest this victory. I was expecting it to be go to like 1917. I really thought 1917 would just take the Oscar. And if not 1917, once Ford versus Ferrari won film editing, because I totally expected that to be 1917, then Ford versus Ferrari won, and I was like, wait a second. What if we're all clowns and Ford versus Ferrari wins?
See, what am I gonna do? See, here's the thing. I had Parasite in film editing.
Yeah?
I had Parasite in film editing. What else did I give it to? Like, some of these, I normally do two categories. This year, I molded those two categories together. And so half of these are based on, like, award season stats, and then half of these are personal preference.
Wow.
So, okay. Like, in the places where I had 1917, because I was like, you know, the Oscar safe bet category, I was like, if Parasite switches out with that, I'm totally fine. Like, and that's what it did for a lot of it. Like, the 1917 places that I had, it was switched out with Parasite, which I was like, I'm fine. I'm not mad. But yeah, no, I had Parasite for film editing. Yeah.
I would have loved Parasite to get film editing, because I think Parasite deserved all of the awards. But... But I mean, I would have expected 1917 over Ford versus Ferrari, because they literally edited it to look like one shot. So I'm like, hello. But but that's all right. It all works.
Yeah, 1917 was in my spot for cinematography. Like that, there was no other option. I'm like, this belongs to you.
Yeah. And they got what they deserve with that one. Roger Deakins, yeah. He did a marvelous job. But I was, you know, first it was like Parasite won. Well, of course, Parasite won original screenplay, which was totally well deserved. And I was very excited for that. But there was also like no other option. Like if anything else had won, it would just been like sacrilege. But then when it won best foreign film, like people were like, well, I guess that means it's just like the consolation prize, right? It's not going to win best picture, because no one that's won best international would ever win best has ever won best picture. But I was like, that's only because no one that's international has ever won best picture,
right?
So there's no precedent for it. I don't know. But I was a little bit like, I don't know, will they give them both? Because I was just remembering, I don't know if you watched the Grammys, but I just remember Grammys. Lizzo won best pop song and Billie Eilish was nominated, but then Billie Eilish won best song or whatever, you know, I don't remember what the word category is. And I was like, how are you going to win the whole thing if you don't even win in your category?
Right.
So in that sense, I was like, maybe they do the same thing with this one, and then they wouldn't give it to Parasite. But thankfully that was not the case. I still cannot believe, I really cannot believe that Parasite won. I don't know. I didn't know what to do with myself. But I love how much the audience actually seemed to love Parasite. Like, you know, standing ovations, bringing the lights back up.
Tom Hanks, that reaction. Yes. Was probably, like, my favorite thing from, mm-hmm. like, that whole little section. But I feel like because it was, like, 1917 versus Irishman for so long, mm-hmm. everybody was kind of, we're okay with this.
Right.
We're okay with this at that point. But that, I don't know, that was the vibe that I got. Like, it was between those two heads, and then it became 1917 versus Parasite, like, toward the tail end of it. Mm. And so it was like, we're okay with this.
Yes.
We're and then you have like Jane Fonda up there, and then like the whole thing.
As soon as she made that face, like when she opened the envelope, she made that face, and it was like, of course, mm-hmm. Cassie Parasite, right? Like that's why she looks like that. But mm-hmm. So that was quite a wonderful cap off to the evening. And you definitely need to watch Parasite. I think it's on Amazon now. Maybe did I make that up?
And it's on Amazon, and I think it's also on YouTube on demand, which is where I will get it, because I have a YouTube film library that I have, because I used to store stuff on my iTunes account, mm-hmm. but it takes up a lot of computer memory, so I switched over to YouTube, so it's just digital space that it's occupying.
I see, I see.
And so that's the route that I'm going to go to with that one.
I accept this. So yeah, I'm very happy that Parasite won. I can't believe that the best film of the year actually won best film at the Oscars.
I came home with the most awards that night, and Bong was even like, "I'm sorry you had to engrave my name so many times."
I'm like, sorry I gave you so much work. that was quite funny. His humor has been on point the whole award season, and of course mm-hmm. we have to give a shout out to Sharon Che.
Interpreter?
Like, it's interpreter, thank you. I was like, I know it's not translator, it's interpreter. Because translator is someone who translates from another language into their language of origin. Mm-hmm. And an interpreter is someone who translates in real time to the other language that is not the language of origin. Yes.
But yes, MVP award goes to Sharon Chow, because... throughout the entire award season, and just like love watching her reaction to everybody else's reaction on that.
Yes. So. She did what she had to do. I loved Bong Joon-ho's speech when he won Best Director, and he was, you know, mm-hmm. quoted Martin Scorsese, and Martin Scorsese looked, you know, genuinely of that. And then when he thanked Quentin Tarantino for promoting his work, even when no one knew about him, which I don't know that it was meant as a veiled reference to Harvey Weinstein, but it did make me think of, I don't know if you've like read about how Harvey Weinstein sort of tried to bury Snowpiercer when it came out.
Yeah.
Because Bong Joon-ho wouldn't edit it the way that he wanted. Mm-hmm. And of course, that Quentin Tarantino worked with Harvey a lot. So, I was like, oh, that's interesting. But anyway. Yeah, so overall, I guess I'm very satisfied, even if the Oscars are probably not satisfied with the ratings. I was very satisfied with the Parasite Awards.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a good show. Like, I thought it was actually a really great show otherwise. Like, Eminem was a surprise, sure, but it was a best song montage anyway, and that song from 8 Mile was a big song, mm-hmm. and it's still a big song, and still on the radio. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if it didn't get the ratings that it wanted, I really liked this one.
I think, like, if there's anything that was a little bit strange to me, because, like, for the most part, I really liked it too as well. But the one thing I didn't like was, like, how it's, like, I don't know if it was, like, the Oscars told them to do it, or if the Oscars just let them do it. If it's the second one, then that's better than the first one. But when they kept bringing up, like, the way that they had failed to be inclusive this year, like, I love how y'all are just pointing it out, but are you going to change anything?
Right? Yeah. Like, you can tell, like, I'm not, like, some of it was, like, natural. Like, we know that everybody is mad that not enough women were nominated in the categories. Right. And of course, we know Natalie Portman's cape was amazing.
Yes. Natalie Portman's cape was amazing.
But I mean, hopefully, it'll. I mean, you can nudge at it all you want, but I mean, it all will depend on if you make that change or not.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I did see, I don't know if you saw this about her production, or yeah, about Natalie Portman's, you know, cape of nominated directors, mm-hmm. or not nominated directors rather. But someone was like, well, maybe her production company should start hiring female directors if she's so mad about.
Someone who's doing a really good job at that, actually, is Reese Witherspoon in Hello Sunshine. They are doing a phenomenal job at that. So if you're not aware, if you're still jabbing at Natalie Portman, please stop. She's amazing and she's trying. But Reese Witherspoon's company, Hello Sunshine, is actually doing really well in that category. So if you want an example of that diversification, they're doing great things.
Well, hopefully we'll have to, I wonder if I've seen those, if any films of those, because I don't know. You tend to know.
Big Little Lies. You've seen their TV shows. Oh, of course. Big Little Lies. Yeah. The Morning Report. That's all under their umbrella.
Oh, the morning show with the one that Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston star in?
Yes, ma'am.
Ah, I need to watch that show. My friend watched that whole season and he was like, I need you to watch it just for the sake of, like, understanding what I just watched.
it's like, I need to watch this so I can have someone else talk about it too.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, all right. So, do we have anything else we'd like to say about the Oscars, or do we wish to move on to our next topic?
I think I'm okay. I was really happy with Hildur and John and Elton John and then also John Talpin's win. I'm still bitter about Taron Egerton.
He was another one that deserved an Oscar nomination. He gets such a fabulous performance. It's just you know, one thing that I'm like vindictively, even though I don't even know why I'm vindictive about it, but like I like that The Irishman didn't win anything.
Oh, I know. I was so happy. Like, I love Martin Scorsese, don't get me wrong, but I was actually low-key very happy that it didn't get. I was like, don't get anything. I love you still, but don't get anything.
I was just like, no. So that worked out for me. I would replace either of those guys, Joe Pesci or Al Pacino, with Taron Egerton I guess they're both in supporting, so it doesn't count, but still. Yeah. I'm like, okay, fine, Adam Driver, you can go. I would replace you with Taron. I was like, who can I take out of this category? Because I knew that Laura Dern was going to win for Marriage Story, and Laura Dern deserves a win because she's awesome. But like, I was also not impressed with Marriage Story, so I was like, oh, okay.
I wasn't impressed with The Irishman. Like, I tried going through it several times. Mm-hmm. I really tried. I couldn't root for it as much as I wanted to, and I loved that entire cast.
Yeah.
Otherwise, normally, like, I would see a Danny DeVito film in a heartbeat, and I would see an Al Pacino film in a heartbeat, but I, for some reason, there was something about it that it couldn't sit still with me.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was very long, for one. So it's very hard to get through.
I mean, I went through the 22 Marvel movie marathon, but I mean, that's a different kind of thing. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm still gonna give it another shot. I'm gonna give The Irishman another shot,
because so nice
I generally love Scorsese, mm-hmm. but for some reason, there's, you know how you don't agree with every single project your favorite directors do.
Of course, yeah, it happens. So you know, what are the other ones that are like, I really love Little Women. I was sad it only got one award, but you know, at least it's an Oscar winner. At least it's an Oscar winning film.
This is true.
Yeah. Same with Jojo Rabbit. Jojo Rabbit's an Oscar winning film. Yay.
I was happy that it got screenplay, because that was my choice for that one as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I think all my faves, like, you know, made do with something. And then my least faves did okay still, but that's all right, because they didn't get, you know, they didn't hurt me. So yeah, it worked out.
Overall, generally happy.
Yeah. So speaking of faves, one of our faves, Lin-Manuel Miranda, has many things in the works. Many things are happening.
Many things. Next year is going to be a good year for Lin.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great year for Lin in that company, especially one in the first half of the year, and then one following it up on the second half of the year. So It's the year of the Miranda. Pretty sure it's probably going to be, like, in that height of summer blockbusters. Because the thing is, they can't put it in December because of West Side Story. So they have to take the summer blockbuster hit for it to be alone, away from Steven Spielberg, so. Yeah, I'm assuming June or July, or, like, beginning of August. But okay. I don't see it going any more further than coming close to December because of the West Side Story threat that it has.
Right. With it. Okay, yeah. Let me see here. In the West Side Story,
I think it's movie. December. Is it a Christmas movie? Hold on.
I'm looking it up. The West Side Story movie is coming out, hopefully not. Yes, thank you. 1961. That is not what I meant, clearly.
it's December 18th.
Yes. December 18th. In the Heights is coming out this summer. So June 26th, 2020
is in. Oh, this summer, yeah.
Yes.
I'm still thinking 2019 because that's when I first heard about it. I'm like, oh, it's 2020 now.
Right. Never it's hard to believe that we have moved forward in this life. Also, I didn't realize that John Chu, the director of Crazy Rich Asians, is the director of In the Heights, and I'm so excited now. I'm even more excited.
He is, and I'm so happy about it.
Yeah. So I cannot wait. And Anthony Ramos is in it. So it's just great. Everything's great. Stephanie Beatrice, Dasha Polanco, everything's exciting. I love everything. This movie's going to be amazing. I cannot wait. And just In the Heights was my, like, definitely top three musicals. It was one of my top three musicals, and then Hamilton came out, so.
Yeah, no, In the Heights
is number one. But
In the Heights is still very special, though.
Yeah, yeah. In the Heights, but, like, because In the Heights was definitely, like, I related to it so much when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
It came out when I was in college, I think. Or at least, maybe it didn't come out when I was in college, but it was on Broadway when I was in college. So, mm-hmm. you know, so I saw it on Broadway. I remember I saw it with Lin-Manuel first, and I was like, I felt like I was Nina. I was like, Nina is me! Except I didn't literally drop out of college, but this is how I feel! So, you know, because it was like my freshman year of college or whatever.
Mm.
So I remember I saw it my freshman year of college, and I felt like Nina, and so I related to her. When I was watching it, and then I saw it again in my senior year of college, and it was Corbin Bleu. Corbin Bleu was playing. Yeah. So anyway, I love that show. Oh, and I cannot wait to see it. But then they're gonna do the Hamilton musical movie. Mm-hmm. It's a movie, but it's a movie of the Hamilton Broadway musical.
Basically, yeah. So before the original cast, a lot of them stepped out after, as most original companies do after they get their Tony. A lot of them started dropping off, but I guess way before that, they were like, oh, we should probably record this while we all have them here, kind of thing. So we know we have a full stage version of the original Broadway company. So Lynn, Leslie, Renee, Philippa, I was going to say Eliza. No, her name's Philippa. Anthony and everybody in there. But I'm also probably thinking that we might get additional footage on top of that, like B-roll footage and like behind the scenes footage in addition to just the straight up performance of it.
I would expect that too, and I think that would be amazing.
Right? Because otherwise, I mean, I'd be totally fine with it just being a straight shot of the entire show all the way straight through, but I have a feeling if Disney is releasing it and it's going to be kind of like an end of the year kind of thing for 2021, because it's October 2021 that it's coming out. They're going to do something really special for it because it's the big name. So
I would expect that. But yeah, either way, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's amazing because Hamilton, it's like a story about like populism, basically democracy. But Broadway as a species is just like very undemocratic, like it's very difficult to see if you don't have $1 billion. So a lot of people, even though it's like the most, you know, the most popular musical when it came out or whatever, you know, the biggest musical of 2016, etc., many people don't have a chance to see it because they don't have access, you know, either they didn't get the lottery and they can't pay $600 for a ticket,
or they missed it when it went on tour. Like I got to see it. I was working with Disney at the time. I think it was 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cast member night at the time, and we went to the Pantages at like, it was a certain price ticket for us. So that's how I got to see it. And I know they're still on tour and they have multiple locations. So even if you can't go to Broadway in particular.
Right.
But even then, it's still hard because the demand is still so high for it, which skews pricing in a way.
Yeah, exactly. The demand is high and is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so expensive. But this way now, everyone will get a chance to see it, you know?
At least a version.
Yeah. A version of it. But, you know, at least it'll, because bootlegs are impossible, you know?
Oh, first gosh,
off, they're illegal. And second off, they look bad. Right?
So they do. And they, most of them, like, if you go through them, like, even if you know that, like, I shouldn't be doing this, but even if, like, you come across them, like, they don't have the same impact as you would seeing it in, like, an HD version, which I hope this one will be. Mm-hmm. And you can say you can support it in a way that you wouldn't have been able to otherwise with the regular movie ticket prices.
Right. Exactly. I'm very, very, very excited for this. I'm sad that we have to wait until 2021. I feel like 2020, but that's fine, I guess. We'll wait. Plus, that way it gives Lin-Manuel a chance to compete in two different years.
That's true. Like, he has In the Heights this year.
Yeah.
This year, not next year.
Right.
Remember, my brain is like, this year. It's this year now. In the Heights is this summer. He is also working on The Little Mermaid with Alan Rickman. Mm-hmm. So that is coming up. He is just, and there's also, I keep thinking he's still in his Dark Materials. Like, I'm not sure if that show has officially ended. I think they're going on for a second series.
Yeah, it's going to have a second series, yeah.
Okay, so he has that.
Yeah. Do we know when the Little Mermaid live action movie is supposed to be out? I don't think they don't have, like, a release yet.
Not that I've seen. Like, I know there are four new songs, because they've dropped that over the red carpet interview, but let me...
That makes me expect it in 2022, you know?
I think so. Hold on.
And if that's the case, I'm all for that. Because it'll be 3 years!
Right? Like, one project each year.
Yeah. Let's do it!
He's doing really well with Disney right now, in general, so... Yeah, I don't think we've been... I don't think we've been given a... Because I'm trying to find something, and I can't... Hold on, Little Mermaid cast, is this, which version is this? Oh, there have been so many versions of the Little Mermaid, I'm like, wait.
I just looked it up, and the last thing I saw was like, oh, 2018, oh, you know, and I was like, that's not the one I'm looking at. Oh, the one that they did the live performance of it, remember?
Mm. You know,
which was not so hot, even though the cast was great, but I feel like they rushed the production, or, you know, I don't know what they did. It was weird.
Right? No, it felt really, really rushed on that one. And I'm like, you have this great cast, mine. You're using them.
Yeah. That was sad times.
April, Little Mermaid, it's April. No release date has been confirmed as of yet, but production on the live-action remake is rumored to begin sometime April 2020. So either late 2021 or spring 2022 is what I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not confirmed.
But yeah, so hopefully, he gets another Best Song Oscar nomination for that one, because he hasn't won the Oscar yet, right? Is that the best song?
Yeah, like, he was, that's really hard to say fast. How Far I'll Go did get the nomination, but it didn't win that year.
And that hurt my feelings so bad.
I know, I was like, Moana is everything, why? Yeah. But I was also okay with the other one on that one.
That was the year that La La Land won, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, that La La Land did not win.
Right.
But it won Best Song.
It did. It got City of Stars that year.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's forever going to be in, like, the top 10 Oscar moments that people count down with.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
It's like, oops. Our bad. Sorry. But yeah, no, it's almost at an EGOT, but he's not at an EGOT.
Right.
Like, he's got one left.
So we gotta give it to him. Let's make it happen.
He has a, like, if you get the Oscar for that, then he'll have a PGOT, because he also has a Pulitzer Prize. So it's like, it's one up compared to some of the others, but almost there. Not completely there, but almost there.
Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed for you, sir.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Put in the Heights this summer.
Yay!
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy for Anthony Ramos. I'm sorry.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I love when. Although, going back to the Oscars, I thought it was funny how they had people to introduce people to introduce people, and I was like, okay, we get it. But right? Anthony Ramos introducing Lin-Manuel was great because then Lenore was like, he's a movie star, and I was like, at first I didn't understand, and I was like, oh, that's right, uh-huh. He's gonna give me the hype.
He was also in A Star Is Born too with Lady Gaga. So.
Oh, that's right, he was in A Star Is Born. That's mm-hmm. true. I forgot. He was so cute in that.
Right, I'm just like, he's doing so well. I'm so happy.
Yeah, you go, sir. Oh, and apparently he's in She's Gotta Have It, which I have not watched, but maybe I will now because I've always planned to watch it. I just never got around to it.
Same.
Also, wow, it first debuted in 2017. I'm like, how old am I? How much time? I'm not remembering. Like, 2017 feels like yesterday to me. I was literally like...
It feels so long ago.
What? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, so Lin-Manuel got a lot in the pipeline, and we are excited.
Yes.
Now, one of the Valerie's topics that she wanted to mention, because, you know, we can't go without talking about the MCU,
is...
That apparently Sam Raimi of the famed Spider-Man trilogy from Sony, the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy, was approached or is in talks to direct Doctor Strange 2 in the wake of Scott Derrickson's exit.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but apparently they are looking for a new, or they have already promoted a new writer. One of the Disney Plus series, maybe the Loki writer, I think, to be the writer for Doctor Strange 2. Which means that a lot of the stuff that we know about it might be changing, but also makes me think that they really are intermingling the Disney Plus series in general with the next phase of the MCU. And I'm not sure how that's going to work out for them. I feel like it's a really big change. So,
especially in terms of reach anyway, like you'll have the people that already have it, but there's also a lot of people that don't, so
right so it definitely makes it feel like more exclusive, like a more exclusive thing. Like on the one hand, like yes, you're going to get more content more often, but on the other hand, that's a lot to keep up with. Disney Plus costs money, even though they have made it quite affordable, it still costs money, and not everyone is going to get it or have the time to catch up on these shows in between the movies. So how much of the shows are going to be relevant to the movie? How much is that going to confine the vision of individual directors? Like, obviously, a lot of times the MCU, it's really like, it is Kevin Feige, and then you're just directing what Kevin Feige wants you to direct. So maybe that's why Scott Derrickson left in the first place. But it is harder, it'll be harder, I think, to put your own stamp on a movie when it's got so much, like, of a machine behind it. Unless you are Taika Waititi, in which case I'm sure you can do what you want.
But yeah, no, we'll see how it goes. Like, especially when you have to go underneath the umbrella of each phase that you're in when you're working on these particular stories. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but hopefully it's not all exclusively on Disney Plus, even though I'm a Disney Plus user and still want most fans that don't have it to be able to see it too. So
yeah, I don't know. What are we have you heard all the like various rumors surrounding Doctor Strange 2?
I've been following it on and off. I'm okay with Sam. I mean, as long as we don't get a Spider-Man 3 treatment.
I feel like that was, you know, that was beyond him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
as long as we don't touch that, kind of, I'm okay. Because I love Doctor Strange as a character. He's one of my favorites from the new group, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm there's like a lot of stuff, like I've heard, like, you know, like America Chavez is going to be in it, Brother Voodoo is going to be in it, of course Mordo's coming back, Wanda, like we heard that Wanda is going to be in it, you know, and that WandaVision is leading directly to Doctor Strange 2. Also more recently Clea, who is like the comic book love interest of Doctor Strange, is going to be in it. So if all of that is true, I'm like, there is a lot happening in this movie. So we'll have to see how they manage to like you're saying, like, we don't want it to go into Spider-Man 3 territory or Amazing Spider-Man 2 territory, right?
Oh,
it's
man.
Like, why is there three movies happening in this one movie? So
we'll have to
see. But it's kind of feeling like Doctor Strange is going to be like the linchpin of the next phase of the MCU, and just kind of like maybe how we Or actually, perhaps WandaVision is really the linchpin, and then that goes into Doctor Strange, too. But still.
Because I feel like, even though we don't have the original core Avengers anymore, Doctor Strange is still that familiar character from that group. So mm-hmm. they can easily use that as a leverage to still keep on characters that we know already, like Wanda and Vision, and right. just kind of keep moving it forward with some familiarity, but also bring in new content and talent with it.
Yeah. So, but
yeah. It's the writer of Loki.
Okay, so it is the writer of Loki.
Yeah.
So I literally know nothing about Loki, especially, so I don't know, like, I mean, how that show is going to be. So I guess we'll have to find out.
I know Tom Hiddleston, he's been posting things on Instagram, so if you want to see, like, behind the scenes thing, he did do, like, a stunt behind the scene video of him. Doing some Loki stunts, but I think that's really all I've seen of it so far. Like, we don't have much. And we did get the Super Bowl sizzle of all three. But we don't really have that much of any of them right now. But hopefully soon, at one of the conventions coming up this year, we'll get a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing we're going to hear stuff at, like, D20 whatever. I'm like, does the number change? Is it always D23?
Yeah. No, it stays D23. It's an homage to, it's a very important year in the company. So it's Disney, okay, and then it's the 1923 year. So that won't never change, but it's every 2 years. So it's next year. Yeah, this is an in-between year.
It's in-between year. So then mm-hmm. I guess Comic-Con will have to do. Comic-Con will have to do because they don't have D23 this year.
There's WonderCon, Comic-Con, South by Southwest is a really big one.
Oh, yeah, South by Southwest, yeah. So, there's plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
But either way, in the meantime, we can all look forward to, I guess, Black Widow. So,
yeah.
Because that's the first one up.
That's true, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, lots of excitement. I totally forgot to say Birds of Prey. Yes, reasons you have to watch Birds of Prey.
Yes, yes. Tatiana's reasons for Birds of Prey.
This is why Birds of Prey is doing poorly in the box office, because I couldn't even remember to talk about it on the podcast. So, no, I saw it yesterday morning, or, you know, I guess technically afternoon. I saw it like 11:30 a.m. yesterday, and I very much enjoyed it. I was one that was, like, skeptical of Birds of Prey, just because I was like, it's clearly a Harley Quinn film and not a Birds of Prey film. mm-hmm. And that's still true. But now I feel like they really should have, from the start, called it Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey. Which apparently it seems like they might be changing the title for search expansion purposes, because people know who Harley Quinn is and they don't know who the Birds of Prey are, unless you are like a DC fan in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, A, people don't know who the Birds of Prey are. And then B, people aren't, you know, they don't just bank on DC movies to be good the way they do Marvel movies. So I feel like that has probably really given it, you know, made it take a hit in the box office. Unfortunately, because I think it is super cute. Kathy Ann does a great job directing it. It feels like really, it's like a fresh, fun take on Gotham City overall. A great exploration of Harley as a character and who she is without the Joker. And it is a nice introduction to each of the Birds of Prey-esque characters. I think the one that shines the most would be Journey Smollett-Bell as Dinah. She gets the most FaceTime. Well, maybe not the most FaceTime. Maybe the other girl, maybe Cassandra Cain has more than her. But she does have, like, or I guess, like, the biggest origin story. Like, you see she's at the club, she works for Black Mask, you understand why she's there, and you understand why she then ends up working with Harley Quinn, with Renee Montoya, etc. And so, like, I would watch, like, a whole, you know, just Dinah movie. But Journey did an amazing job. There was lots of really, like, some really great moments for her, not just action pieces, but also, like, emotional scenes for her that I thought she did really well in. Rosie Perez is obviously awesome as Renee Montoya. And Ella J. Basco, I love her so much. I thought she did such a fabulous job. I love her little, like, team up with Harley Quinn, just, like, the whole dynamic they have for the whole movie. However, she's not Cassandra Cain, which does not matter if you don't care. Like, if you don't know who Cassandra Cain is, which will be most of the audience, then it's irrelevant. But as someone who's, like, you know, a Bat Family fan or whatever, you know, it's like, this isn't Cassandra Cain. Like, they could have named her any other small child character, you know? And it would be fine, because there's absolutely no reason for this character to end up working with, like, the DC's version of Batman, ever. So, and Cassandra Cain isn't really a Birds of Prey anyway. So, for many reasons, they could have called her someone else. They could have given her a different name. But that's okay. Like, still have it be Ella J. Basco. Like, literally, my only problem is that I was like, just name her something else, because she's not Cassandra Cain. But that's okay. So, yeah. I think that the one that probably gets the shortest end of the stick would be, ironically, maybe, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Which I say ironically just because I would have expected her to be, like, the second biggest character after Margot Robbie, just based on, like, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's career. But she, it's like, she's fun, and Huntress is, of course, a really cool character, but they don't really delve into her backstory as much. They don't have as much time for her, especially because she's, like, kind of a mystery at the beginning. So when they do actually give it to you, it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's nice, thank you. But if you go see the movie, and then it makes enough money to have a sequel, then I'm sure she would have a lot more, and it would be great. They have an awesome dynamic. All the characters do. Also, Ewan McGregor and Chris Messina are hysterical as villains. They're so funny. They're very, like, very unique and strange as the movie's villains, but they totally work for the kind of film that it is. Plus, the action scenes are really awesome. I'm not really a big fan of action. Like I don't really care about action, rather. But they have, like, really inventive moments of action sequences, and they have, like, really fun bits within them. So I thought they were really well choreographed, and props to whoever did that. Yeah, I know Margot Robbie helped produce the movie, so I think she had a lot of input into, like, Harley's characterization, and also she was the one that wanted it to be a team-up film in the first place. So that's very cool. Like, I think she did a great job with Harley, and I understand her impulse between wanting to maybe attempt a film, but, like, maybe they went a little too, you know, they jumped in a little too quick with that. They should have tried to carve out the Harley part of it first, in terms of marketing, I mean, because, like, in the movie it's fine, but the way that it was marketed is a little bit muddled, maybe. Like, I saw, supposedly, they're changing the title to Harley Quinn : Birds of Prey, so that people can find it as a Harley Quinn film, because most of the time, and the emancipation of one Harley Quinn doesn't actually show up, right? So you'd have to be looking for Birds of Prey, which, as I said, you already don't know. So hopefully that helps, but I don't know why they wouldn't have called it Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey in the first place. I just think that's so strange to me, because it was like, that's clearly what it is. But, oh well.
Maybe it was like an SEO kind of thing that they were probably considering, just like keeping it short and not too long, even though that's a fine title. Like, if you just had Harley Quinn and,
right,
because you do have some long movie titles, but I can probably see why, just for, like, if you weren't aware of who they were,
right,
kind of thing.
I don't know, I guess so, but yeah, I don't know when you'd have time to see it, but I totally support you seeing it, because it's super fun, super cute, and yeah, I'm full of joy for it.
Actually, I did get, because I'm on the studio list for, like, advanced screenings for fans and things like that. Mm-hmm. I was working that night, I think, when I saw that you got tickets for Birds of Prey, and I'm like, no! But I will see it. It is, I'm so behind on a lot of things right now, but it's on my list. Because I love DC just as much as I love Marvel. And I know people are like, no, you have to be one or the other, but I'm like, screw it. I'm both, yes. And I will see all of it. I don't care.
He's like, I love them all.
Right?
Yeah. I'm definitely, like, in terms of comics, I'm a DC fan. Not that I won't read Marvel, because obviously I will, but, like, DC is what I grew up on, etc. That's, like, what I'm drawn to first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So I'm always more attached to the DC characters, but since the MCU began, of course, I've now become attached to those characters as well. So now I'm everything. Now I'm an everything person.
Just love all of it.
Yeah,
and then exactly. Talk about all of it.
And why not?
We're allowed.
Why not? Yes, we are allowed. We are allowed. It's for the best. We all need a little more love in this life.
Exactly.
All right. So with that in mind, here's one more thing for you guys to love. And it is a British series called Agatha Raisin. that you can watch on the subscription service Acorn TV. And Acorn TV just dropped the third series, so the third season of the show. I think it's kind of like there's 4 or 5 episodes a season, I think. And they're each, I think that each episode is kind of like a movie length. It's kind of like Sherlock in that way. So the series stars Ashley Jensen as Agatha. And she is a woman who becomes her own PI when she moves to a countryside town. And Valerie at the TCAs earlier, a couple weeks ago, she interviewed one of the co-stars, Matt Matui, as well as the executive producer, Barry Ryan. And they talk about what to expect in season 3, as well as what other shows they are going to be adapting moving forward. So here is that interview.
So I am Barry Ryan, and I am the producer of Agatha Raisin.
And I am Matt McCooey, and I play Detective Constable Bill Wong in Agatha Raisin.
So if you have been on the moon and you don't know what Agatha Raisin is, Agatha Raisin is a crime comedy drama that's based on beautiful books written by an author called M.C. Beaton, who sadly passed away at Christmas. There are 30 books in the series. And it's the story of a woman who, in the middle of her life, at a difficult age, gives up everything that she's ever known to fulfill a childhood fantasy to live in the beautiful Cotswold countryside. But having lived life under her own terms as an adult woman, the adjustment and the transition from the city to the country is not as smooth as it would be if it were, well, anyone else other than Agatha Raisin. So, in the beginning, she arrives and she finds it hard to meet people. And the people aren't necessarily that welcoming because she's an incomer. So she enters a quiche baking competition, the idea that this will ingratiate her to the wider community. But not being of the cooking kind and being of the shop buying kind and microwave meal kind, she buys a quiche from a posh London store, enters into the competition, and it turns out that her quiche poisons the judge and he dies. So not only is she a newcomer, an outsider, an interloper, she's also now suspected of murder, and she has to use her wits in episode 1 to clear her name. In episode 1, she clears her name with the intention of, having cleared it, clearing off back to London. That doesn't happen. She stays, and she becomes, for a time, an amateur sleuth. And then by the time you meet her in this series, series 3, she has set up her own official detective agency. She's no longer an amateur. She's a bona fide, qualified PI, a gumshoe.
How is that going to change the series and the way she fits into the community, that she's now gone legit, I guess you could say, although it's still not completely legit because obviously she's not a cop?
So I think, okay, so we started the detective agency. That starts in this series. So she becomes official in the first episode of this series, series 3, Agatha Raisin and the Haunted House. She's legit, but she's still not, because she's not a cop, she's still using her wiles and her intuition and her senses more than she's using any kind of official techniques. So she's, to all extents and purposes, she's kind of like, she's still undercover. She still has to do sneaky, covert, crazy schemes to kind of get the evidence and the information that she needs. In the books, Agatha's quite a loner, but in our show, she's part of a kind of wider ensemble of misfits, a band of kind of Scooby-Doo type people who help her investigate, and they've all got their own strengths and weaknesses, and they've also all got their own different access points into the community. So Bill Wong's a cop, Sarah is the vicar's wife, James Lacey is proper posh and fits in, Sir Charles Fraith is even posher in his landed. So they've all got different ways. Mrs. Boggle is the nosy neighbour who's part of the neighbourhood watch, so she knows everyone and everything. So all of them help her get different access points for information and evidence.
So obviously your character is an actual legit cop.
He is. Yes.
So how, talk a little bit about his relationship with her, and especially because if she's the one solving the crimes, the way that affects the police.
Yeah, he is a cop, but he's a useless cop, clearly. Agatha always solves the crime. And I think, you know, when she first moves to the village, Bill absolutely fell for her, as all the men did, actually. And so she had this sort of power over him. So throughout the series, she could, you know, rely on Bill to get her the information from the police that she needs as part of the jigsaw. So she, that builds her way into the official side of it. And she would use and abuse him quite a lot about that. But he was always willing, you know. He's very fond of her. I think he sees her as a sort of, he wants to protect her from evil, you know, and he knows she's not going to stop, so he might as well help her. Sometimes, well, actually most of the time, to the annoyance of his superiors. What's been nice for this season was with the opening of the detective agency, there's sort of developed a friendly rivalry now between Agatha and Bill. You know, she's like, you can't solve murders without me, which he wants to change that fact and be a good cop in his own right. But there's, yeah, it's a nice rivalry now, you know, who can solve the murder quicker, and obviously she does.
Does that mean they're not working quite as closely together if there's the rivalry behind it?
They are. I think Bill always will try and be official and not get involved, but Agatha's just got this hold on him, and then he will quickly be drawn in to the chaos that surrounds Agatha.
So tension turns a tank.
So obviously there are a lot of like crime dramas out there, especially in the UK. The UK seems to be absolutely obsessed with it, right? Bringing in all kinds of different ones from all over the world. But the nice thing about this is that as much as it's crime solving, it is incredibly lighthearted, and it's a comedy. So how important was that to you in developing the series and having that as a way of standing out even from the crowd?
It's our USP. Comedy is our USP.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, I've got a cough too. Try to hold it in.
Comedy is our USP. So when we first were commissioned, our very first partner was a bit scared of the comedy, which is why the series one isn't as funny as series two or three, because we've got different partners on series two and three. So they were very uncomfortable about making jokes around scenes where people had died. So our show is three genres. It's crime, comedy, and drama. They're all wrapped in one. And when we were an hour long, we encountered a thing where, unless the balance is right, they can rip each other's heads off, and you don't know what the show is. So it was an uneven. I think series one is strong, but some of the episodes are better than others, and there's an unevenness about it. Mm. Whereas the people that we work for now, Acorn TV, allow us to fully execute our USP. Be as funny as we want to be, and embrace that side of us. So, and I think that's what makes us stand out. So there are shows that have a light-hearted, a lighter touch, like Midsommar can be dark, but it's also got light moments in it. Generally, they're domestic and a bit old-fashioned, but we have a very modern take on it, and ours is that we are pure comedy drama.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, families that watch it together with 10-year-olds, because I think, you know, there is so much kind of dark, gritty,
bleak
murder mystery, which is great, and there's a place for it, and there's obviously fans of it. But if you're a fan of the genre but want, actually, instead of gripping your seat for 2 hours, to actually sort of relax and enjoy yourself and laugh, then Agatha Raisin is the show to go and watch. And I know people, yeah, who watch it with their families, because we don't show anything ever too gruesome. You know, there's some quite, if I want to say, comedy murders, you know, drowning in jam, poisoned quiches.
Buried upside down, head first in your own potted plant.
Yeah.
There's a decapitation scene in one of the episodes in series three where the person's head is in a box delivered to the house, but it's still funny and it's still lighthearted. And also, I think the thing that we also do that makes us different is that we look different to all those other shows. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not dark. We make a purposeful effort to be as bright and as vivid. So, you know, you can't compare us to something like Vera or even Grantchester. You know, the shows that we stand alongside better are things like Pushing Daisies and Northern Exposure, those kind of shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, neither of them were... Well, Pushing Daisies was a procedural, but we embrace our surreal and we embrace our vivid. Mm-hmm. So not everyone's dressed in country colours.
No.
You know, we try and do a bit of style and a bit of colour.
Well, you mentioned Vera. That was here, obviously, earlier this week. And it is one of the things that I've noticed that the UK seem to be doing better with is that it's actually showing, especially women of a certain age that aren't 20-year-old models. Do you notice that difference? The U.S., we're pushing for more diversity, but that's not the diversity anybody wants to be pushing for, whereas that's still a huge part of the population. But I've noticed that the U.K. has always kind of been progressive on that.
We've always been strong on our national treasures. Brenda Blethyn is a national treasure and also one of our finest comedy performers. So her being in a show like Vera is surreal in itself. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a comic genius, and had, you know, 20 years ago, she would have been on our list for people that we wanted to, and that's no disrespect to her, but you know, she is, and it's great to see that she's had the success she's had with Vera, because they are fine books, and it's a fine character, and it's a really well-made show. For me, I really wanted to reflect the books that we were based on. Mm-hmm. So that's why Agatha's different. I think it's a joyous universe that we can have now, where we are generating characters that older actors who in previous generations would have been ignored and discarded, mm-hmm. but we can celebrate them and give them something purposeful to do, where they're not just guest stars, they are the thing of the show, the meat of the show. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of parallels what's happening in a wider world too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that we're woke, but I think there's a thing now where people go, actually, why aren't we telling those stories? Why aren't we looking at these lives of these women, and why aren't we looking at why isn't our viewfinder embracing them?
Mm-hmm. I always wonder if it's partly because, like, Brenda Blethyn is a great example, is that she's been working for so long and you just kind of want to keep following her, whereas at the beginning of Hollywood especially, like, we started and you're always, okay, who's the new person, and then you forget them. Mm. So I wonder if that's part of it. So you did, the series is obviously based on a series of books, and you did just lose the author, Marion Chesney Gibbons. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about her role in the show, how involved she was in the show while she was still with us?
Marion Chesney Gibbons, it was part genius and part maverick. She is one of the cleverest people I have ever met, one of the most entertaining, and one of the most laugh-out-loud people. But if Marion didn't like what you were doing, you knew it. She took no prisoners, and she suffered no fool. So when we wanted to do the adaptation of Agatha Raisin, we were told no. The publisher said, no, I'm not even going to go there, because Marion hated Hamish Macbeth, the original, so much that she campaigned against it, went to the press launch, spoke, you know, argued with Robert Carlyle, the star. Who do you think you are playing Hamish Macbeth? And so they said, it's best left alone, Barry, don't go there, it's a hornet's nest. And I said, come on, how hard can it be? Let me meet her. So once I met Marion, and I knew what she was like after an 11-hour lunch, where there was a lot of whiskey and a lot of smoking, she said, okay, but, you know, F it up and I'll kill you. And I went, okay. And if you think that when Hamish Macbeth stopped, the next Hamish Macbeth was called Death of a Screenwriter. It tells you what she was. It tells you a bit of the measure of Marion. So, from day one, when we got the go-ahead to develop the show, Marion was involved. If the changes we made with her blessing. You know, she was involved in casting decisions, she was involved in editorial decisions. She came to the set once in series one, and she said, I don't know how you do it, it's the most boring day I've ever had.
It was me on the phone. It took about 2 hours to film this bit on the phone, you know, with all different angles. She just thought, I'm off.
And then she came to do the EPK and support stuff for series two, but she was bored by the actual day-to-day processes of how we did it. Mm-hmm. But all the way up until the first, to the shooting script occurred, Marianne was involved. So it's a massive loss to our process, mm-hmm. because, you know, we spoke a lot, and you know, especially now when we're easing up to developing series four, you know, not having that cog is going to change our wheel.
Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, but all of the episodes so far have been based directly on the novels?
Yes, and they'll continue to be until we run out of them. We did one episode in series one that was based on a short story, Hell's Bells, mm-hmm. where the writer then had a freer hand to kind of invent around the bones of Marianne's story. But we've got, I think we're on 16 now. So we've got, oh no, so we've done 13. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm losing count.
16.
16.
14 left.
We've got 14 left, but also we've got a couple of short stories and two Christmas books that don't fit into that pattern. And we've also got a new book that she'd finished before she died. Mm-hmm. And then we've got spin-off rights. So if we want to originate material after that, we can.
So you feel comfortable doing that? Because that's always, I think, one of the scary things is when you're so beholden to the book for so long, going off.
She wasn't precious. She understood the process and she understood the differences between telly and books. I think the big mistake the first Hamish producers made, which I would never do, is that they took the character but abandoned the stories. And then they also didn't have some of the ensemble elements. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake. So we wouldn't do that. But it's a by the by, but you know, Marianne also trusted Free at Last with Hamish, so we're rebooting Hamish now.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a timeline for that?
Script's being written, and we have interest from a broadcaster who would pay a healthy chunk, so I'm hoping that we'd be able to do it January 2021. It's Scotland. It's the Highlands. It needs that. It might snow and it's freezing as hell. Look, so January 2021.
Can I be Hamish Macbeth?
God, Mary.
How good is your accent?
Bad.
Mary would have loved you to be actually.
So, to wrap this up, one thing I always like to ask, so our website is called With an Accent, and we like to promote things that, like, maybe people haven't heard of. So I always like to ask, is there anything you're reading, listening to, watching that maybe we haven't been exposed to here in the U.S. that we should be checking out?
Series of books. Mm-hmm. Never the Bride, written by Paul Mars, but it's spelled M-A-G-R-S. He's written Doctor Who spin-offs and all sorts. But this book, imagine, the Bride of Frankenstein is alive and well, living in a seaside town in the north of England called Whitby. Mm-hmm. She owns a bed and breakfast called the Spare Parts. And on the hill is Christmas Hotel, where it's Christmas all year round, and Mother Christmas lives there. Bitches Moor is this big hole in the earth in Whitby. It's not an archaeological feat of wonder. Actually the gateway to hell. And at the end of the first book, Effie, who's the last in a long line of witches, and Brenda discover that their friendship is not accidental. It's absolutely purposeful, and their job is to protect the world from whatever could come down Bitches Moor, because Bitches Moor is the gateway to hell.
Oh my God, I want to read these books like now.
Good, I want to read them.
We're adapting them.
Yeah?
Oh, nice.
That sounds fantastic.
And so there's...
Can I be Effie?
There's eight in the series, and then novellas, so he went into the novella format after that.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that sounds really fun.
And I'm going to recommend, talking of the Highlands, there's a writer called Peter May, and he's got a trilogy of books set in the Outer Hebrides, basically. Mm-hmm. And They are great. Murder, mystery, thriller, detective guy, three books on the Isle of Lewis. That's what it's called. Really great, yeah.
Cool. We don't get a lot of book recommendations now. I'm really excited.
Okay, yeah. Peter May. Fun. I think the first one.
Fantastic. I will definitely look those up. All right. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Pop a la Carte, episode 106. You can find us at With an Accent on Twitter, Pop a la Carte Pod on Twitter, or withanaccent.com, and Pop a la Carte wherever you may listen to podcasts.
Yes. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Farewell.